Welcome to Sox Talk on the air right here on SoxTalk.com. I'm Mario Space coming to you from the city of Chicago, and many feet west of me in California is Jason Gage. Jason, we've had a good, or the Sox have had a good week so far.
Yeah, it was a solid week. It's good to be back for another week discussing White Sox baseball with you. Of course, on my mind, and I'm sidetracked of, is we're going to do this show quickly. I got 40 minutes to the U.S. World Cup game starts, and I won't be missing it.
Have you been watching the World Cup in general?
Yeah. I got up and watched some of the games that are at like 6 a.m., and then I fall asleep by about halftime again.
See, yesterday was the first time I actually watched it. I watched the Mexico and Iran.
Yeah,
I watched a little bit of that.
Yeah, Iran pretty much stunk, and it was a pretty dirty game in my book. But they both play like a dirty style in my mind. I mean, there's a lot of fouls.
There were a lot of fouls.
If you noticed.
Yes, I didn't notice
And
that.
It seems to be a trend when you play Mexico. There's a lot of fouls. I remember that when we knocked them out last year. It was a great game.
All right, well, on the Sox, 4-2 week. They took 2 out of 3 from the Tigers, which was big to see, considering what they're now 5-1 against them. And they took 2 of 3 against the Indians this weekend. They lost the final game. Which is really, I think if you look back to last year, that's what the Sox did a lot. They usually took the first 2 games, and they dropped that final one, it always seemed.
Yeah, so we did that both days.
Yeah, they're kind of back to their old
trend. Both series.
Yeah, both series. They're kind of back to their old ways in terms of how they're winning as far as winning one-run games and actually taking the series. But still, they're still not there yet as far as where they need to be.
Definitely not. But you got to like the fact that the team still battles back. They got 19 come-from-behind victories. Friday's game, they came back and beat Cleveland. Saturday, they came back late, went to extra innings, fell behind in extra innings, came back and won. And then Sunday, down 10-2 in the ninth inning, they ended up scoring 3 runs before he got an out. Brian Anderson had 2 hits in the game.
Yes.
Including a dead center bomb. And then the outs were hard hit balls, with the exception of Pablo Azuna. You had Jim Thome hitting one all the way to the track at the wall in dead center, and then Ramakowiak ripped one over to right field. I mean, the Sox, the one thing you like is they seem to have that attitude where they're not quitting. And that's a really good sign to see. They're not just laying down. Even though it was a 10-2 game, I knew there was no way in hell we'd come back. They made it interesting.
Yeah.
They at least, you know, fought back.
That's what you have to do. Whenever you're down 10-2, you necessarily don't think, okay, let's come back, but you say, let's try to make this close, because I believe the Indians did this too a couple times last year with the Sox, where the Sox had that big lead and the Indians, they didn't come back, but you just get that enough runs just to have the other team thinking, you know, we almost blew that game. And at least you get the momentum back on your side at the end of the game. Because if you were watching the entire way, when Ozuna made that final out, the crowd was upstanding cheering.
Yeah, the crowd was really into that game. I'm sure a lot of them left. I would have left. Down 10-2, I turned the damn game off, and then I happened to turn it back on in the ninth inning, and I watched that.
Yeah, I usually head out early anyway and just get home and watch the end of the game, so even if they're winning.
And, I mean, the Sox have 38 wins. It's not a bad thing. We're only New York and Detroit have better records. There's not much to complain about, but there still are things to complain about. However, I think the White Sox have made some right steps. Brian Anderson's going to be in center field. He's the everyday center fielder, and we're going to get into that later on today. The guy I ripped apart last show, you defended him last show. Obviously, neither of us knew what was about to happen, and that was that Cliff Pulley was going to be placed on the disabled list.
Yeah.
And considering how valuable he was to our bullpen last season, this is a major loss. At the same time, I kind of see this as a blessing in disguise, just because maybe it is true and he is suffering from a little bit of a shoulder stiffness, and that's the reason his velocity is down. So that could give us hope that he could really regain his form when he gets his rest and he gets his shoulder back to 100%. However, it could very well just be a mental break, and they're just giving him 15 days off.
It could be a mental break. You know, from what I've seen, I think there's been times that he hasn't had the stuff that he had last year in terms of speed. But I think he's had his stuff plenty of times this year, and all it is just he's keeping pitches over the plate and outside, and he's letting guys reach for it. I think if he challenges guys a little more and busts them inside, maybe he might have some more success. I think Pulley could come back and do a solid job this year. Is he going to do what he did last year? No, I think I think it was maybe a possibility entering the season, but considering how he's come now, he's going to have to make a lot of progress in order to get back to where he was last year. But I think if he could go to being, you know, a 4 ERA guy, a 3.5 ERA guy, just a solid middle reliever, even though the Sox probably need more than that in their bullpen, it's better than nothing. So maybe the 15 days, or however many days it would be, maybe it's just a little break that he could have, and hopefully he comes back and is a solid middle reliever, and it is a solid bridge guy, per se.
I'm hoping that's the case. And Ken Williams happened to mention, I think, yesterday in ESPN, the game was televised on ESPN, and Joe Morgan was talking about it. Usually I take what Joe Morgan says with a grain of salt. However, he was talking about what he was mentioning with Ken Williams, and Ken Williams is out there looking to make a deal, especially for relief pitching. But as of now, it doesn't seem like another team is willing to talk to him. And yeah. Peter Gammons, who I know a lot of people dislike, but Peter Gammons is, as far as I'm concerned, about his best in the business when it comes to baseball and reporting baseball. Because prior to contrary to what people think, he really does have a lot of connections
within
the organizations. And a lot of what he says is true. Just because there's rumors going on doesn't mean a great deal is going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like just because you're talking about going on vacation doesn't mean you go on vacation. Oh, wait, that has
But, yeah, and I said this, I think last week we were talking about with Montero. I mean, Kenny Williams would go out there and work the phones and ask and talk to teams all he wants, but there's got to be teams that are willing to make trades. And right now in June, how many teams are really going to be out there looking the deal? And you have to find that right match. You know, it's not just having a guy out there available, but you have to have the pieces for the other team to pull that trigger. So it's not going to be easy for Kenny Williams to make a trade. I will say this. If there's one GM who can make a trade at this time, it is probably Kenny Williams. He'll probably figure out something. But I think if anything is going to be done, I would think it would probably be at the end of the month at the earliest.
Yeah, this is the month he likes to make trades. He's about the only GM that likes to make trades early because he likes the 3 months of help as opposed to 2 months of help. And the only guy right now out there is LaTroy Hawkins, who's not a bad guy. He's no. failed in pressure situations. He failed in Chicago before with the Northsiders.
Yeah.
And the Orioles are apparently have him on the block, and they'd be willing to get rid of him because the Orioles are out of contention. And he wouldn't be a bad guy because he's got great stuff. Yeah. He's had prior success. He's not pitching bad right now. And the only thing that you have to ask is, are you going to have to give up a frontline prospect for him? Because I'm literally giving up a frontline prospect for any reliever that's not a total stud reliever.
In that case,
I'm willing to give up a little bit more.
I don't think you necessarily have to give up a lot for LaTroy Hawkins. The thing is if they're going to make a trade like that, I would think that they should try to make it now for the simple fact that while he is pitching better, I think some time in Cooper would actually do him good. So I think if they could get him now over the next couple weeks and then have a few extra weeks with him where Cooper could work him out, because what does he have right now? I mean, we can't just go off stats, but what, his ERA is probably in the 3, I would bet?
Yeah, it's something. Let me give us an exact stat. Pull that up here. But yeah, Cooper would be a good bet, because Cooper is good at the mental side of the game. And
that's a big thing with Hawkins, because he definitely has his stuff.
He has great stuff. I mean,
because the thing is if his ERA is at 3, that's a solid ERA, but it could be a lot better considering
it's 3.99, so it's kind of high.
Okay.
He's giving up 33 hits.
So really, when you look at the potential of Hawkins, he has the potential of having an ERA possibly in the 2s. I mean, that's his stuff. Or at least, 3.2 or something like that. If that's the case, if you get him, let's say, July 30th, you have a couple months where it's crunch time. You know, even if he's a decent reliever, he could be a lot better. So if you maybe get him in June, you have the whole month of July where maybe Cooper could tweak things with him, and maybe by August, he's going to full strength and he's the Hawkins of old. So I think a trade like Hawkins or any type of fringe reliever who has the potential to be better, I think it should be made sooner rather than later, because then Cooper has some time to work with him, and if he has any struggles, it'll be in July and June and not August, September.
The interesting thing is Hawkins has a 2.25 ERA at home and a 7.71 on the road. And the thing that concerns me is I always remember Hawkins as a guy that almost never gave up hits when he was in Minnesota. And right now he's giving up hits. He's giving up more hits than innings pitched. But I have to imagine the stuff's there. And I'm going to pay attention to some Baltimore games this week and try to catch him and see how he plays, so next week's show I can maybe give a little bit more of an idea and a better opinion, but I think he's the type of guy that you could get probably at a reasonable price in terms of prospects. He's 33 years old. He gets paid $4.4 million. So if the White Sox are willing to take that salary and save Baltimore some money, they could get him for a middle type of prospect, or even Jerry Owens type of prospect, a guy that has a little bit of upside but has struggled this year.
And really looking at Hawkins' numbers, once again, we can't just go straight off the numbers, but looking at his numbers, he's had three teams. He's had the Blue Jays, the Twins, and the Angels that have hit him pretty well. His ERA is well over six in all those teams, and everybody else is pretty much either a zero ERA or in the twos or threes. So he's been pitching decent overall, and you know, like I said, if you're going to get him, I think you got to get him now. But really, I don't see a trade happening for another few weeks. And going to the bullpen, Polite's out, Tracy's in. Have you seen him in all a couple of games? I know I missed his first appearance.
Unfortunately, I mean, Tracy's my boy. I've been calling for him to be called up for a long time now. He's a great competitor. He's a fiery competitor.
Yes.
I missed completely the game that he pitched in the two-inning performance, his first outing, which was a damn good performance considering he pitched 7 innings 3 days before that.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So, I mean, it tells you, and I remember when I interviewed Sean Tracy a couple years ago in Winston-Salem, and I was talking to Brandon McCarthy at the time, and Brandon McCarthy and Tracy are very good friends, and McCarthy was always joking how he wishes he had the type of rubber arm that Sean Tracy has. Sean Tracy could throw the ball every single day, pretty much, and Tracy's verified. He says, hey, I throw in between a lot more than anyone else throws. I mean, his bullpen sessions, he throws for a long time. And Tracy's got a very good arm. I mean, when he pitches out of the pen, he can get it up into the mid-90s.
And that's
good. He's
got
sinking action. He's
and
got
that's
a good slider.
Really good. And,
he gets ground balls.
And a lot of times you might have those guys who throw 95, 96, and if you pitch them a little too much, they start dropping velocity. When they drop in velocity, they're not nearly as effective. So that's good to see. I saw him yesterday. And he was throwing 95. I know he was throwing inside a couple times to the innings. I don't know if he just had control problems or if he was, you know, seriously going inside on them. Because I believe he hit Hafner, then he went and he threw inside to Martinez. Martinez didn't like it too much. But you have to love Tracy just standing in the mound, just staring at him right back. Just no fear at all. So, and I think we saw him in spring training.
He looked good in spring training.
I do like Tracy. I think the main thing is his control problems. If he could keep his control intact, I like him as a reliever, especially since he's got the rubber on. He has the ability to go in out there frequently, you know, regularly throughout the whole week and throw 95.
He is our in-house option in the pen, and the White Sox are going to have to take this time, and Cooper's going to have to work with him and getting him to throw strikes. But the mental toughness is there. I mean, you're not going to find many rookies who in the second game hit Hafner and then have Victor Martinez stare you down, and you just sit there and stare right back. And he's not afraid to go inside. He showed that last game. And those are usually the traits. He's got the stuff. He's got the willingness to go inside. He's got a rubber arm. He's just got to hone his ability with the strike zone. But he is the type of guy that, for the most part, can be effectively wild. However, with Sean Tracy, you're going to have games where he's ugly.
Yeah.
Because of the control, and you're going to have games where he's at flat-out dominant. Yeah. But he's a pretty decent option, especially as a type of guy that could be a back-end guy right now and then develop into a mid-reliever a year from now, and then maybe even into better than that in a year or two.
And he's really what they have right now. Obviously, he's far more talented than Montero, but him and Montero are guys that they're going to have to settle with for now until that trade happens. And really, when you look at Tracy, right now he's probably in the back end of the bullpen. If they were to get anybody, probably Montero's the long guy out. So you could actually see Tracy sticking up and staying with the club for a few months, maybe throughout the rest of the season, pending how Hermanson develops and, you know, pending Polite and all that.
Yeah, and Montero, I slammed him last show, but I got to give the guy credit. He's came up the second go-around, and he's throwing strikes. One thing I can't tolerate is walks. So maybe you all question why I would be a fan of Sean Tracy, because he is going to give up walks in the pen. But I think his stuff and his potential is worth it at this point, because he's about the only guy we have that could be a really good option for us if everything went well out of our bullpen in-house without having to trade anyone. In Montero's case, he's got a good arm, but he doesn't have any secondary pitches. But he's coming in, he's throwing strikes, he's being aggressive, and he's making the other team hit him, and he's letting his fielders do the work. And he did very good this week. He pitched in a couple games. I don't think he gave up any runs. He did give up some hits. He had some ugly-looking innings, but he got the job done. And that's better than Cliff Polite could say, because Polite was walking connecting guys and getting hit.
Yeah, and if he, and once again, if he, and I said this last week, if he could just hold up for a little while, especially if McCarthy maybe develops and develops into that setup role, which I was actually hoping to see him a little bit yesterday, because I think he probably could have used some work to get it, you know, from a consistency standpoint. We talked about that last week, though. But, you know, if Montero could at least hold up for another week or a couple weeks until a trade happens, because a trade does have to happen, then I think all will be good. A couple of notes this week. Anderson and Uribe. Guillen showed confidence in both of them, saying both of them are going to be staying there as their starting player. I like the fact that he is keeping Anderson. We're going to talk about Anderson in center field. But Juan Uribe, he's saying Juan Uribe is his starting shortstop, and he will continue to be his starting shortstop, despite having decent options behind him in Cintron and Ozuna.
Yeah, it's interesting. On the one side, he's proven that he can be successful. He's proven that he's an upper echelon defensive shortstop.
Yes.
And with our team built on pitching, we need to have good defense. Alex Cintron is a serious downgrade. There's a reason he was not an everyday player in Arizona. There's a reason he's not an everyday player in Chicago. A lot of guys that are bench players look great on the bench, and you think they can start. But there's a reason they have the job that they have. And in Pablo Ozuna's case, he's a natural shortstop. I can't say he's a very good shortstop defensively. I haven't seen him play enough games there. And in his credit, he hasn't played there enough consistently enough with the White Sox to where he could really get back a feel and get comfortable there, although he's fine to have there for a game or two.
Well, no,
and
that,
I wouldn't be opposed
to
playing more of them while Juan Uribe tries to figure things
out. Exactly. That's kind of where I'm getting at. I think Juan Uribe is your shortstop long-term, and by long-term I mean this year. Obviously, stuff could happen in the offseason, but I'm saying for the next week or two while Uribe is struggling, guys like Ozuna, guys like Cintron, they should get some more work out there, because they are definite downgrades to Uribe defensively, but at least they're decent enough to where they could hold their own, especially when you have a guy like Creedy to your right who could pick it in, Noguchi at second base. Going back to Uribe, though, he's playing a fine defense. But I don't know if you've noticed about this, but when you look at him last year and really the year prior, he always had this urgency when he was out there. You know, it always seemed like every time the ball was hit, it was like Ichiro was running on the first baseline. He would catch it and throw it. This year, you see that hesitancy. You see that, like, he's catching the ball. He's taking his time. He's making softer throws. He doesn't have that quickness. Like, he's got to get it and throw it and fire it over to first base like he had last year. And that's what I think made him so good last year, is that every single play, he gave it his all defensively, and he gunned it as if, you know, the guy is close to beating that play out. You don't see that this year. He seems very passive defensively.
I think he lacks his fire, and I think a lot of it, and it's been more recently he's been getting worse, and I think a lot of it has to do that his struggles at the plate are affecting him on the field. And he's been flat-out atrocious at the plate. Brian Anderson's been bad. Juan Uribe has been uglier, because at least Anderson's drawn some walks. And the fact that both of them, and you brought this point up, and it's an excellent point last week, that they're both hitting 8-9, it magnifies the problem, because you have two automatic outs.
Yes.
And with runners in scoring position, and both of them have hit, they've had a lot of opportunities with runners in scoring position, and we've had trouble turning our lineup over because of this. And I wonder if it wouldn't be that bad of an idea to throw someone in between them. Maybe it gives them each of them a little bit of protection. I don't know. I mean, it's tough, because whoever gets thrown in between them is obviously going to get semi-pitched around.
Yeah. Well, really, but the guy, I mean, you would have to think would have to be a Creedy.
Yeah, and Creedy isn't necessarily – you want Creedy getting good pitches, because he hasn't exactly proven himself as the type of guy that can hit the bad pitches. And he's having a really good year this year, and you don't want to mess with that.
Especially late in games, he's definitely going to get pitched around a little bit more. But then again, he's batting in front of these guys. So if they were going to pitch around him, they're going to pitch around him now, especially knowing that there's two guys behind him who really can't get the job done. I mean, and I'm going to say it again. I think that, you know, right now I think that the plan should be to sit Uribe for a little while, get Cintron and Ozuna out there, even though Ozuna hasn't played the infield consistently really since middle of last year, because that's when he started playing for Pitsenik in left field. Get them in the infield a little bit more, and hopefully Uribe could figure it out, because if he can, it'll be a nice boost, because you know when he gets hot, he'll get hot for a little while, and he could carry an offense. But going to Anderson, you have to like the fact that Guillen went and he said he's our center fielder, because defensively, while there is a drop-off with Uribe to Cintron or Uribe to Ozuna, it's not as big as going from Anderson to Mikoviak. And that's not a knock on Mikoviak. I've said it. you can't really blame Mikoviak because he's put in a situation where he's not a natural center fielder, and he's just – I think the effort is there. I think Mikoviak is trying his hardest out there. It's just it's not a natural position for him. But dropping – going from Anderson to Mikoviak is a big drop, a huge drop defensively, and I think you just got to – for now, I think you have to settle with Anderson's bat and just enjoy his defense in center field.
Yeah, and he made it one of the better plays of the season earlier this week when he went made that catch crashing into the wall, and then somehow gets off of a great throw. He has all the ability in the world. We saw it with the bat yesterday when he had two hits. One of them was a broken bat single. The other one was a missile shot to dead center field. So, I mean, it's there, but you also see the pitchers exploiting down and away, down and away, down and away, down and away. He's either going to just have to lay off that pitch, tip his hat if they actually paint the zone right there, or figure out the flaw and start working on that. And I'm sure he's working on it right now with Greg Walker.
The one thing,
and at the same time, he needs to start swinging at his pitches.
Yeah.
Because mentally, he's really out of a mix. And you'll see him get a pitch middle in, and he's kind of taking it.
After his first at bat against Westbrook, and Westbrook's one of those guys where if he's on early on, he's on. He's a tough guy to, you know, he's going to keep his sinker ball low, and he's hard to hit. But in his second at bat, because I believe he got his hit in his first at bat, in his second at bat, he had a fastball, or it looked like a fastball, pretty much right down the middle. He tried to bunt, backed away off it. Then the next pitch was a sinker ball low and away, and he swung at it.
And then he just stayed low and away the rest of the time. He worked the count to 2-2.
Exactly, and you have to at least like Anderson doing that. He was 0-2, and he had some tough pitches low and away that he backed off on. And really, I was going to say this earlier, but I completely forgot. When you look at this team, they're not where they need to be, but they've had some quality at-bats over the last week. If you remember guys like Cintron and, you know, late in the game, Mikoviak Ozuna has had some quality bats.
Iguchi's been shooting the ball.
Iguchi. They've had some better at-bats. And that's really, if I go back, this is the one thing that I haven't really liked about their offense this year than last year. Last year, they had the ability to have these long at-bats in key parts of the game, and that hasn't been the case this year outside of this last week. I've seen some key at-bats where they've been fouling off pitches, where they've been taking close pitches, and they've just been having quality at-bats up there. And, you know, Anderson, going back to him, every once in a while he does have that. Every once in a while he goes full count and he battles up there, but then sometimes he's down 0-2 and he gets blown away in that third pitch, and that's it, 1-2-3, he's done.
And when you're in slumps, you find yourself in a hole. And I've said he's got to get his mental approach a little better. And I'm hoping that Ozzie giving him this starting job back is going to allow him to just be able to relax, get comfortable, and start building up and building upon things and getting better. Because the talent is there. The patience is being shown by Ozzie. He made a very good call on this. And I think the White Sox are going to reap benefits of this. And you may still see him stink. But in a year or two from now, you guys are going to be loving the fact that Ozzie stuck with him. And the more important reason, I know Mikoviak's a downgrade, but when you have Scott Pesednik in left field, it makes it even more so important to have Brian Anderson, because Pesednik is terrible. He's terrible, and he's not hitting right now. And when he's not hitting, he's a liability in the field. He's a liability at the plate. Luckily, he has a decent on-base percentage going for him, but he needs to get back on a hot streak here. Or just get back to playing consistently. He had that one really long run where he was killing the ball, and he looked really good. But in between, it's been a lot of ugly. And you can't really handle that. And I think in the long term, with the Uribe's play, that next year we will have a new starting shortstop, unless things really change, that will be our leadoff hitter. And our prospect, Josh Fields, if he's not traded, will be our starting everyday left fielder.
That might be possible. I will say this, and we were actually talking on IM the other day about Pesednik. Defensively this year, he's been bad. I will say that. He has been bad. There's even the times he's caught the ball, he's looked very shady. But you go back to last year, and I thought he did a decent job last year. I mean, I don't think he was great, but I think the balls that were hit to him, he caught. This year, there have been times when – yesterday was a perfect example. When you saw him defensively, he looked a little comfortable out there. But then there's some days where he's so – I don't know. It seems like he can't judge any ball off the bat. But like I said, you look at yesterday's game, and yesterday seems like he was getting some better jumps. It seems like he was a little easy getting under the ball. But once again, he usually follows it up with a game where he's letting balls drop or whatever. So, you know, who really knows what Pesednik, he may not be here next year. We don't know. You know, he's, what, 29 years old. He more or less came out of nowhere last year. It'll be interesting to see.
Wait, who's 29 years old?
Pesednik, I think, was, what, 29 last year? I think he's got to be with 29, 30 right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But he didn't really come out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, in his years with
in
the
Milwaukee when he kind of came out of nowhere. But he was a proven commodity when the White Sox got him. He was coming off a bad season though.
Well, he was coming off a bad season. The year before he had a good season, but the year before that he was really nothing prior to that. All he really had going into last year was 2003, and that's what the Sox were getting him on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you know who really knows? I think if Pitsenik could pick up from a defensive standpoint, offensively, beginning of the year offensively he was horrible. I mean, he was absolutely terrible. He was close to a Juan Uribe. Then he got hot. Lately, while he hasn't been as hot as he was, I think he's at least giving some decent at bats here and there. He's getting some hits in there. He's working some walks here and there. So he's not nearly as bad as he was prior to the season. But once again, if he's going to be playing the defense that he's been playing in left field, he's got to be producing consistently offensively.
Yeah, and you did say he. I'm not comparing him to Brian Anderson and Juan Uribe because those two are probably. I could make a case for the two worst everyday players in terms of offense in baseball.
Right now,
and even their approach is horrible. You know, everything's horrible. And Uribe is worse than Anderson is. I can tell you that much for sure. Uribe's approach is piss poor. Luckily, he's insanely talented.
Yeah,
but it's not working this year. And I wouldn't start him until he got back and started working on his leg kick. I don't know what's up with that. I'm not in the organization. I couldn't tell you that. But hopefully he builds upon that. But speaking of a guy the White Sox are trying to build upon, they took Freddy Garcia. He made the start yesterday.
Speaking of talent. Talent of Garcia and Garland and...
Well, I was going to talk about the fact that Freddy Garcia, the White Sox told him, enough of your BS of just throwing your breaking ball and not being a power pitcher.
That's what it was yesterday. All breaking balls all day long. And he was throwing pretty hard yesterday. The first
inning,
he was
into the mid-90s.
Yes, and he laid off it all day long. The first inning, he was throwing hard. After that, it was curveball and curveball and curveball. It just, when you're throwing 94, 95, which he really hasn't been doing a lot this year, you got to take advantage of it, and he's got to start busting people in with these fastballs, and he just wasn't doing it yesterday, and that's why he got killed.
I can guarantee you Ozzie Guillen and Don Cooper left him out there to get hit for a reason. They told him. I don't know if you know this. They told him before the start, throw your freaking fastball. Be a power pitcher. I don't care where the ball goes. Throw hard.
And I love
and
it.
And he did it the first inning.
I love when
first
managers
inning,
do that.
First inning, he threw fastballs. 8 pitches, he got right through the inning. Second inning, he had a little bit more trouble. He started to rely more on his breaking balls and his sliders, and it got uglier from there. He stopped throwing his fastball. He has a good fastball. He's had it all season. Problem is, he hasn't wanted to rear back and throw it. Early on, sure, the first couple weeks he was still suffering. He was still getting in shape. Since then, he's had the ability to reach the mid 90s if he wanted to. He just hasn't done it.
Very similar to Contreras. And I love when managers do that. You know, you look at Garland, and really Garland hasn't really been throwing his two seam inside on guys like he's supposed to. I think his last start, I think he did a little bit more. I think he was consistent with it. And really, Garland's been better over the last few starts, so I have no problem with him. But when you look at this rotation, Garcia is the one guy who deserves to stay out there and get his ass handed to him one game, just to really get his ass handed to him one day and let his ERA balloon and just let his numbers just completely go down to the dumps, because he's got to wake up. And like you said, you got a mid-90s fastball. You got to use it. And even when his fastball was not in the mid-90s, it's got some pretty good power to it, to where he could get away with some stuff. But he's got to lay off those breaking pitches. And until he does, he's going to get hit.
Yeah, he gets that fastball back, and he can turn back, and it's there. He just starts pitching with it and starts using it. He will be back to the Freddy Garcia of old, and that means we have 4/5 of a rotation. And John Garland, even though he gave up 6 runs his last start and 7 innings
better.
At work, he pitched better. Most of the runs came in like the 6th inning of that game or something, and he's doing a lot better. He's getting closer. He's still not there, but Vasquez, Burley had a great start, and Contreras have been relatively good. I know Burley's had a couple not rocky starts,
you know,
but he's still been
good. Burley's last start was unbelievable. I mean, he was battling an entire game, and he pitched a hell of a game. Contreras, I'm not really too worried about. Vasquez, and we said it before, Vasquez, I think, is doing the job of a fifth starter. He's going out
he's
there.
He's doing better than that
right
now.
No, yeah, he is.
Consistently going 6 or 7 innings, keeping us in the game. I mean, he is a middle-of-the-rotation guy who's who's really capable any game of being a front of the rotation starter.
Yeah.
I'm giving Vasquez much due, and I'm very comfortable with any of those three on the mound. When Garcia's on the mound, when Garland's on the mound, there's still issues to be worked out, and it's why we haven't seen this team go on a major winning streak, because we haven't had the consistent starts out of all five of our guys for a week or two in a row. And I know a lot of teams aren't capable of doing that, but they don't have the talent and the rotation the Chicago White Sox have, and it's been disappointing to see it all season long, our inconsistent starting. However, three-fifths of it is there, and I think Ozzie sending the message to Freddy Garcia is going to help him bring four-fifths of it there, and Garland is making progress. So I think we will be fine in the long run with the starting rotation. I would have had a little bit more issues with that a week or two ago, but it's coming around slowly. Not quite as fast as we thought it would, but I think it'll be there when we need it. And I think we're going to see our team start to improve. The strides are there. Everything happened this week. It was a positive week. We showed a lot of resiliency. Like you said, we had good at-bats. And the week ahead, we'll have the Texas Rangers. The Rangers own us. It's a four-game set.
This is going to be a tough series. Actually, the next two series are going to be tough. But this Rangers series, four games going into Texas – this Ranger team could explode at any single moment offensively, and it could be rough.
Yeah, I mean, look at this lineup. You have Gary Matthews Jr. starting things off. He's been red hot. And I apologize for suggesting him as a trade bait, because there's no way they're going to trade their leading leadoff hitter at center fielder. You got Michael Young, shortstop in second. Very good young player, very good hitter. He can hit the ball to all fields. You got Teixeira, one of the premier first basemen in the game. Hank Blaylock, an overrated third baseman, but he's got some pop. Kevin Minch, one of the more underrated players. You got Mark DeRosa out there in right field. Solid. Brad Wilkerson, really talented player, but he hasn't really played that well in Texas.
Yeah.
Ian Kinsler, a good young player. He's cooled off a bit. And Brad Barajas behind the plate. The pitching probables of the game. Monday's game is going to have...
aren't they facing Carranca?
Yeah. Jose Contreras, 6-0, 2.54 ERA, will be going up against John Carranca, 4-3 with a 4.69 ERA. On Tuesday, Garland's going to pitch. If there was ever a game I expect Garland to be shelled on, it's anytime he faces Texas. But he did have a good start against Texas 2 weeks ago at the Cell, even though the team lost.
Yeah.
Garland's 4-3 with a 6.19 ERA, and he's going up against Cameron Lowe, who's 3-5 with a 5.32 ERA. Wednesday, Javier Vasquez will be on the mound, 7-3, 4.19 ERA, and he'll be facing Vincent Padilla.
I like that matchup.
Yeah, honestly, the matchup seemed good, but it's been that way a lot, and Texas really plays as well, especially in Arlington. And the White Sox are a 500 team on the road. We have the best home record. And then Thursday, our ace.
Reinicker again.
Yeah, Reinicker, who's been great. And Burley will be opposing him, and I'm hoping Burley can get the best of that. But really, a split against Texas in Texas is not a bad thing. And then
and you got Cincinnati for three games, and
yeah, and I'll be at those games. So on probably won't do our show Monday, but maybe Tuesday, or maybe later on Monday we'll do the show, and maybe I'll have some inside analysis, or maybe I'll just be really tired and jet lagged.
No, we can even wait because then they have Monday. They have the day off. Then they face St. Louis and Houston, which will be two pretty good series here in Chicago. You know, let's get into the Cincinnati thing. They're going to be in interleague play. They don't need a DH. Who plays first base in your mind?
Paul Konerko. I agree. I don't think Jim Thome has been playing all that great as of late.
No.
I mean, he's getting his home runs, but Paul Konerko is... yeah, a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but Paul Konerko is a much more consistent player. Jim Thome is streaky.
Jim Thome is very streaky. Plays, you know what?
Paul Konerko plays great defense.
I was actually looking to bring this up.
Thome draws a little bit more walks.
I know there was a post on Sox Talk regarding Jermaine Dye, who is really – now he's starting to get the publicity that he deserves. But when you look at the MVP of just the White Sox, who is the one guy who you think is the most valuable player on this team right now from an offensive standpoint?
It has to be – even though – okay, there's two ways of mindsets. Jim Thome has been tremendous. He's got great numbers.
Numbers-wise, he's been great.
And – I think Jim Thome has contributed to guys like A.J. Pierzynski, Jermaine Dye, and a lot of the other offensive players we've had really step up this year.
I think I do agree with that. I think, but as far as a production standpoint, outside of the numbers,
Jermaine Dye has been clutch. He's been consistent. He's hitting for average. He's got an insane slugging percentage. He's hitting for power. He's knocking in runs, and he plays a very good right field. I mean, Jermaine
I
Dye's
agree.
been unbelievable this year from the five spot.
Yes. He's been really, and he's been their best player, and you know, Tomei statistically he's been great, and I think he adds a lot to that lineup because obviously, you know, you have all these guys who are playing a lot better. You look at Przinski, he's actually being the guy that he's always had the potential to be. He's not hitting a lot of home runs, but he's hitting the ball consistently, making contact, and he's probably doing that because he knows there's guys like Tomei, Canerco, and Dye who are going to supply the power in that offense, and he can just relax and just simply make contact and go for singles and go for doubles and just try to get on base.
Yeah, exactly. And Dye has been so valuable. And right now, if I was going to vote for an MVP candidate, I was a member of the media, I'm putting in on my ballot Jermaine Dye.
Yes.
Not Jim Tomei, Jermaine Dye. And speaking of Tomei, I've slammed Frank Thomas a lot, and I just want to give the big man some credit. He's been playing tremendous baseball
Thomas.
In Oakland. He's gotten hot. He's got 16 or 17 home runs. He's been hitting .300 over the past month. I as much as I've slammed Frank Thomas, I am out there, and I am
I
actually
seen
rooting
him
for
hit
him.
An opposite field home run the other day, and it actually looked like the Thomas of old who was just shooting the ball that way.
He's had some problems with his foot lately that it flared up, but he came back, he's staying healthy, and he's really starting to get a swing back, and this has been the longest stretch he's been healthy in some time, I mean, realistically, and I'm shocked that it's happened, but I'm giving the big man credit, and I hope he can keep it up in Oakland.
Yes. Now, before we go, he had the Sox draft that happened, what, a couple weeks ago or last week?
It was Tuesday and Wednesday past week.
Yes, and obviously that was after our show. What were your thoughts on it overall? I think they got another Texas pitcher. Didn't they have a Texas pitcher last year?
We started in the first round taking Kyle McCulloch, right-handed pitcher out of University of Texas. He'd been rated pretty much all season in the top 20 in terms of top players available. Obviously, the Sox were picking 29th, and it was really nice to see him fall. He had a little bit of a weak past couple weeks. He's pretty much a typical White Sox pick. Especially early on, collegiate player, which means he's less likely to bust, and he's more likely to be able to have success early on, which gives him trade value next year. And Ken Williams likes turning prospects into players, and he usually has a few guys that he wants to keep, and everyone else is available to whoever wants him, for as long as he's able to get his guy.
Yeah.
But McCulloch is very poised. He's got a good changeup curveball, and he can throw all his pitches for strikes, so he has real good command. And the Sox had some interesting picks, like in the second day, their 19th and 20th round picks are both going to demand top five round money, but they're really talented. We took a John Shelby in the fifth round, and he's a pretty talented second baseman. He's a really good athlete. He's got speed, and he's got some pop. And he's the kid, former big leaguer John Shelby, who's also a coach on the Pirates.
Okay, that name sounds familiar.
But really interesting was our second round draft pick. We took a closer out of Miami of Ohio. Long, he's got a very good fastball. He had some injuries. He's battled back from them. He's got a good fastball, really good curveball, and he could be one of those guys if we sign him quickly that could really, really move up. And I don't know if it's pushing it that he could be up this year, but he could definitely be a mainstay in our bullpen starting next year, which was nice to see out of a second round pick.
And that's really what you get out of these college pitchers. You know, I was curious prior to the draft, and I really didn't look into it. Were there a lot of high school pitchers picked up in the draft? I mean, more than usual?
The draft was very strong at the collegiate level. It was very strong in terms of pitching.
That's good to see.
It was an overall weak draft. But the high school – right now, the premium is on collegiate pitchers. And because of that, a lot of teams – there's a few teams. The LA Dodgers have made a living, and they have, if not the best system, one of the three best systems in baseball, along with the Angels and Diamondbacks. And they've made a living picking high school players. And the reason behind it, and it's a very good reason, teams are overvaluing college players, which means you're getting better value out of the high school picks. I mean, hands down. And the White Sox took some high schoolers. They took a local kid later on in the draft who has a power arm, pretty talented. But a lot of these guys that go late in the drafts, they can be really talented. Everyone talks about Mark Burley being a 36-round draft pick, but you have to also remember the fact that Mark Burley was a draft and follow, and he got top five round money. People don't seem to mention the fact that he got big-time money.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he came out of nowhere.
Well, but you know, the one thing that I do like about the baseball draft, unlike the other ones, is it seems like if you're drafted in those late rounds, your chance of actually making it to the big leagues and being successful isn't that bad considering what round you're drafted. Because a lot of these first-round picks and second-round picks, they don't pan out. Then it's like the 10th-round pick who you know, goes really quick through the system and becomes a solid Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, the White Sox have very few. Like, the current White Sox team, in terms of first-round picks, Paul Konerko is one. Paul Konerko is an absolute machine in the minor leagues. He won a lot of awards.
330, 340 hitter, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Konerko was my favorite player when he was coming up with the Dodgers. And so I was thrilled when he became to the White Sox. And then Chris Widger was a first-round pick. And aside from that, I don't know if we have any first-round picks on our roster. We have a lot of second and third-rounders. Guys like Pruszynski, guys like Kotz, and we have a lot of undrafted guys or free agents. Like, you know, Contreras was obviously one of those. Augustin Montero, Cliff Polite was like a 51st round pick. So I mean, there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
And the thing people forget is they think a guy that picked in 30th round stinks, but he may be a very good young kid. The thing is, they're a young kid. You're a high schooler. It's very hard to see what's going to happen when your body grows and you go to the collegiate level. Mm-hmm. And so you can find a guy, you can draft him in the 30th round, he can go to a junior college, he can play a year, and the White Sox control their rights up until a week before the draft if he's at a junior college, and he could really turn things around, and you could offer him top 10 money. So it's almost even though he's a 30th round pick, he's like a 10th round pick.
You look in kind of to compare it almost to the AAA major level, that there are guys in AAA who bat 330, 340, who have great ERAs, whatever. They come up to the big leagues, and they just don't cut it. And then there are guys down in the AAA who don't have nearly as good as numbers, but they're more major league ready. So I think it could be very well the same thing when you're dealing with high school kid. You might have a kid putting a major great numbers on, at high school, but he's still not capable of going into the next level and performing, whereas you have another kid who's not putting up those close numbers, but he's more major league ready, or at least ready for the minor league baseball.
I think the best way of putting things is, this is my overall feelings. High school, coaching, coaching, coaching. I don't care how much talent you have. Coaching is what wins out in high school. In the collegiate level of baseball, my school, Cal State Fullerton, I got to give them credit. They're going to the College World Series for the three out of the four years.
Yeah.
They're back. If you watch them, they're not the most talented team in the country. They rarely have top picks, even though last year we had a first-round pick. Coaching wins out, but you need talent. You need some talent. Yeah. Coaching wins out still. And then you go to the major leagues. And this is like the same in terms of football between high school and college and pros. Then you go to the major leagues and talent wins out. You need coaching. Sure, coaching's important. But talent in the end is what wins out because you're going up against very talented major leaguers.
Yeah.
And guys like David Eckstein are a dime a dozen. USA, USA scores a goal. It's checks. Son of a bitch.
They're down 1-0.
See this? It's down 1-0 on a header. 5 minutes into the game. This is why I couldn't do the show. I've been distracted here.
I thought you actually did a fine job. I thought the show was very nice today. It was a little over 40 minutes, which is I think perfect timing. And that's it then, because soccer's starting and you must watch it. But we'll be back, maybe not next week, hopefully, because the week after it might be a little hard to get a show in too. So we'll figure it out. We'll get something done.
Yep, thanks for listening to us. As always, if you have any feedback, shoot it to us at contact@futuresauce.com. And you better be pulling for the U.S. soccer team, because I'm putting the blame on myself here. But the Czechs are a damn good team. I think they're second in the world in terms of FIFA rankings. So we'll see what happens, see if the U.S. can come back. And either way, it's going to be a great World Cup.
See you next week.